Sir Rick, we are back live. It's the Asylum Fantasy Football Podcast at asylumfantasyfootball.com.
Yes, indeed. You can find us on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe for free, rate us 5 stars, and leave a comment.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter, at Asylum Football. That's where it's going on.
Yeah, drop us a line, asylumfootball@gmail.com.
All right, Rick. Well, huge night. We won't spend a lot of time shilling here at the beginning. Big thing. First thing we want to do, welcome to the Blitz. It's Tuesday night. It's the Blitz on Blog Talk Radio. We have joined forces with Kellogg's Comments with Greg Kellogg, the DFW Dynasty Paulson, the Big F and Dynasty Show with Michael Bronte, all joining forces together, now known as the Blitz on Tuesday nights on Blog Talk Radio.
Yep, and it's a great package. So, you know, once you start listening, you don't want to quit, that's for sure. And let's bring on our special guest tonight. We have the producer of the Roto Experts on Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio. You know him on Twitter as @TheExecNewYork, or NY, Corey Parson. Corey, welcome to the Asylum.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Glad to be here talking fantasy football on a Tuesday night. Glad to be down with the Blitz, so looking to get forward to it. Won't be able to protect us tonight. There's no schemes to pick up this Blitz tonight. Coming straight at the quarterback.
Absolutely. There's the new tagline for Tuesday nights, everybody. Write that one down. So, Corey,
armchair quarterbacks cannot be defended against the Blitz.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So, got a chance to check out the show this morning. Actually heard you on Sirius XM. Great show. Why don't you tell us everything you have going on there and everything else you have going on?
Oh, well, basically, that Roto Experts in the morning, do that on Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio, Sirius 210 XM 87, 7 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, of course. Fantasy Sports Writers Association Hall of Famer Scott Engel is lead host, Adam Ronis, who works for Roto Experts and Newsday out here in New York City area. You can read his fantasy stuff there. We just take a spin through the day in fantasy sports, or the night, recap the night in fantasy sports, get you ready for the day. Right now, we're not talking too much baseball. Of course, we're doing a whole bunch of football, a ton of football, and we try to get joined by some guests, some of the movers and shakers, and right now it's a heavy talk about getting owners prepared for their draft and different strategies and guys you should be targeting and stuff like that. So if you subscribe to one of those little funny radio systems, you know, give us a listen in the morning time. Definitely keep you entertained on your way to work and also get some great fantasy knowledge.
All right. And, you know, that's, you definitely have to check that out because it is good stuff. And, you know, let's just talk about a couple of headlines here. Cedric Benson signed with the Green Bay Packers. They now actually have a legitimate running back. I'm not sure the workload he'll be getting there, but I do believe he's an upgrade. And, you know, and then the injuries seem to be piling up in preseason as well.
Yeah, Cedric Benson, I mean, nothing special in my opinion about said. Like you said, he is an upgrade, but that's the Packers. They're gonna throw the football. Not really looking for said to have much numbers right around now. I got him as an RB3 low end. Nothing special about said in my book.
No, I think he's more basically capable of protecting the quarterback than what Starks has been showing. Starks just had a horrible camp. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think anyway, definitely worked himself out of a job there. And you see him come in. I think he will have some value, some goal line touches, things like that. I agree. You know, maybe an RB3, a guy definitely worth carrying. You just never know. But I think, unfortunately, not going to see those 25 carries a game he saw in Cincinnati.
No, I don't think so. There's just no way that Green Bay runs the ball like that. And, you know, he's going to be pass protection and throw some defenses off balance, I think. I mean, and I agree with Corey. I don't think there's anything special about him, but, you know, he's definitely an upgrade. But we've compiled some questions that we've been receiving over the last few, you know, couple, 3 weeks. And we kind of threw them into a list, what we might think be most relevant right now to the average fantasy player. We just thought we'd cover some of these and see where it leads us. So since you're the guest, Corey, we're going to let you go first on the first question. The first question is, the top three running backs are mainly considered Foster, Rice, and McCoy. Who would you think would be the next three?
The next three, listen, first of all, the landscape at running back this upcoming fantasy football season. If this is your first time listening to a podcast, getting back into it, getting ready to have your league draft, want to find out what's going on, take a look at the board, and you're probably quite shocked. Doesn't look real good right now, and they keep falling, like they keep dropping like flies, too. At this rate, Ben Tate is going to be a first-round draft pick come September 1st. But if you ask me that question, I would have to say, and this is it's tough for me to say these names, but right now the next three I would have to say is Darren McFadden. Listen, we know the situation with Darren McFadden. If the man plays 16 games, he's going to lead the NFL in rushing, hands down. But if Darren McFadden plays 16 games, it'll also be a first. So it's tough to put him there. But listen, saw him last night. He runs like a man possessed. Everything about him, the talent level is there. It's so high. You just want him to stay on the field. Then next, I guess I have to go with my Chris Johnson. Everybody is touting Chris Johnson to have a bounce-back season. I personally think he will have a bounce-back season. He seems committed to proving everybody, you know, that he was wrong. He seems committed to proving people wrong about him. A lot of guys thought that he was over last year, he signed that big contract. Think he wants to come back, show people that he's still Chris Johnson, still has the wiggle, still has the speed to get it done. I like CJ right now. I've seen him go as high as 4. I probably would take him as high as 5. I think Chris Johnson is a guy that can have a bounce-back season, but that's not guaranteed. That's not safe as the top 3 running back. So that's the second guy I would say. Well, that's the third guy I would say, followed by McFadden. And then fourth, I'm going to go with Matt Forte. I know the touchdowns are not there, but you make up for that in the point-per-reception league. Saw a lot of good things with him last season until he had the knee injury. He's got his contract now. Now, the goal line carries that Bush is going to steal from him, that is a concern. But I think the points in the perception in the PPR league coming off the screen passes, he's a guy that can get the ball and take it to the crib from 60 yards out. So you don't always need him to be that tough inside goal line runner. So I think those are the next three that I would go with. If you figure about a month and a half ago, Matt Forte was a mid-second-round draft pick. Now I've seen Matt Forte work his way up to the end of the first round.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I agree. I'll agree with two of them there, Johnson and Forte. My only knock on McFadden is, like you said, if he plays 16 games, it's going to be a first. And, of course, you know, we were on the round table together, so you know that I'm going with Jamaal Charles as my third one. I think he's going to be healthy enough. And that would be my third guy coming, you know, on those three there. How about you, Rick?
Well, I'll tell you what, I got to agree with Corey 100%. And I'm changing on McFadden every day. And maybe I don't want to put too much stock into one play or preseason game. But what I saw out of Darren McFadden last night, I just don't think there's any question. When that man touches the ball, things are going to happen. They get him the ball in space. Is he going to miss some time? Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But if you look at it, up until last season, you were talking 2 and 3 games here and there. But the production he can put together, I think it's going to be more the timing of the injury when it comes. You hope it comes early in the season and he finishes strong. But I think even at 14 games, 15 games, this guy's probably going to lead all fantasy running backs. Forte's the one who has really crept up on me. And here's a guy, and I agree with Corey 100%. And I think being vindicated, finally getting that contract, I think if ever a man felt like he had something to prove, it's going to be this year, you know, to show he's earned the contract. You know, he does have the lack of touchdowns, but that's never been his game. And for a couple of years, he's been, you know, a solid top 5, 6 fantasy running back without the tight ends. That's not his game. If you're playing in a PPR league, I don't think there's a guy you can get much better.
What I will say is this, though, with Jamaal Charles, and you know what? I really think Jamaal Charles is going to have a good season. Listen, the way I've been drafting, and everybody listening to this, if you have a shot at one of the top 3 running backs, Foster, Rice, McCoy, when you come back in the second round and it's working your way down to your pick, if Jamaal Charles slips to you and you start off your draft with Foster, Rice, McCoy, and Jamaal Charles as your RB2, you're cooking with gas, especially the way things are going this season. And I've done that a lot. And getting Charles at an RB2 is a steal, and I think you're well on your way to a very competitive season. But I like him. I think he can be an RB1 in some situations. I'm thinking we'll get to that a little bit later on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree there. I mean, we were one of our, you know, quote unquote expert drafts we were in. I did the same thing. I was actually got Chris Johnson coming down on the first, and I took Charles as an RB too. I think it's just a magnificent steal in that position. And I just wanted to touch on something. I heard you the first time I really heard it referred to that, and you were talking on one of the, I think it was like the Fantasy Sideline show. You know, you called Foster, Rice, and McCoy the holy trinity of running backs. I just love that. We've been using that. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah, I look, at first it was the big three because, I'm sick. I started drafting during the NBA Finals. And I was like, oh, this is the big three. And then I'm like, wait a minute, it's the holy trinity. So, and that's what it is. And what I've seen now is, and I don't want to get too far off topic, but with the quarterbacks in the 6 point per passing touchdown league, you're seeing Brady, Brees, and Rodgers. That's the holy trinity of fantasy football quarterbacks right there.
You got that right. And don't worry about getting off topic. We do that all the time.
So if we had to put together a holy trinity of wide receivers, could we find one?
That would be much tougher. Because I don't think it's no defined number two. Everybody looks at Calvin as number one. Who's number two?
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, right white comes to mind as Fitzgerald, but, you know, you got John Skelton as a quarterback. He's going to put up decent numbers. There's no clear-cut two and three, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you got Larry Fitzgerald, but he's got his John Skelton slash Cobb problem. You got Andre Johnson. If it wasn't for his hamstrings and his groin and everything else, I wouldn't know where to go at number two. You got Roddy White. I might put Julio Jones right there with him. I think it, definitely a tough call.
Yeah, I would have to go White. I think, you know, White, 16 games, 100 catches. I would have to go White, but majority of people would – it's all over the place. I mean, look at Hakeem Nicks. He could be in that mix too. Victor Cruz is wide receiver after one. Calvin's in a tier by himself, and then everybody else is underneath Calvin.
That's it. No doubt about that. So there's a little bonus answer for the guy who wrote that question there. But all right, let's move on to number two. And it's kind of a squirrely question, but, you know, for the average player, they may be thinking, well, one of these guys is going to break out, you know, yada, yada. Who has a better chance of achieving quarterback one numbers, Fitzpatrick, Freeman, or Alex Smith? And, Rick, you can take this one.
Boy, I tell you what, I don't think it's even close. You know, I like Alex Smith as sort of a game manager kind of guy. You know, they brought weapons in, but again, this guy last year, how many weeks were they into the season before they'd even completed a pass to the wide receivers? That's just not the offense they run. They got 17 running backs in camp now, perfectly capable of taking that job. They have Vernon Davis. While I like Smith from a skill set wise, from a game management standpoint, from fantasy football purposes, I want nothing to do with him. Josh Freeman, just not a lot of upside there. Will he be better than last year? I think he almost has to be. Where's he going to go? He's not going to be a 3,500, even a 4,000, even a 3,500 yard back. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick, what you saw those first 7, 8, 9 games last year before the injury, before the picks took over, this guy has the ability to air the ball out, has the ability to put up some fantasy numbers, and it seems like the Bills spend a lot of time in shootouts. So, you know, I guess the point of this question is, if he's looking for a QB1, I guess there's so many other guys. I think my answer to this question would be, unless you're playing in some sort of 20-team league or something, there's going to be, if you're in a standard 12-team league, I think you can find 12 guys better than all three of these guys.
I agree there 100%. There's no doubt about that. You know, I think it's Fitzpatrick has the best chance out of the three without question. You talk about Freeman. I think his number, I actually think he's going to bounce back somewhat this year. You know, but as opposed to last year, you know, he had 150 yards more passing in 2011 than he did in 2010. You know, the biggest thing on him is his 22 picks. You know, he cuts that back down to 14 or 15 and throws 27 touchdowns, then you're right back at Josh Freeman numbers. But I think you're right. I think Fitzpatrick has the best chance if he can avoid the cracked ribs and avoid losing Fred Jackson. So, and Alex Smith, I think he's a very efficient quarterback, and I don't care if Randy Moss is there. I may be wrong, but I just don't see Harbaugh, winging it around a lot. I mean, they've got a pretty good set of receivers, albeit, Moss is on the other side of his career. Crabtree's always hurt. But I have to still go with Fitzpatrick on that question.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, I agree with you 100% on Alex Smith, both of you guys. I look at him the old Bill Parcells term, he's a bus driver. You don't have to win this game. All you have to do is not lose, is drive the bus, make sure everybody gets to where they need to be, and take us down the victory lane that way. Don't look at him as a guy that you want on your fantasy football team. You're looking at Alex Smith on a Sunday afternoon at the top of your roster. You might be in a little bit of trouble. Then you look at Ryan Fitzpatrick. I want to say Ryan Fitzpatrick because you saw how he started last season. You saw him do things like this in the past. But I really don't trust Ryan Fitzpatrick. A little bit too inconsistent for me. I think he has a good season, like his target in Stevie Johnson, who I think is phenomenal. But I think that team wants to run the ball a little bit more. Of course, they can use Jackson and Spiller both out the backfield, and they do tend to get in shootouts. But that defense is much improved this year. I think they want to more or less possess the ball, have a safe game plan, not really have Fitzpatrick throwing it all over the place. Now, the same thing holds true for Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I've seen Josh Freeman perform as a borderline QB1 before. Last season in Tampa Bay was a complete disaster. They quit on the coach out there. We got lethargic situations like guys like Blunt and Winslow. So I think Josh Freeman, under the new coaching staff, with a target like Vincent Jackson, who, listen, I'm not the biggest Vincent Jackson fan, but you get him in a new environment. I hear the word out of camp that he's mentoring Tampa Mike Williams. You got two good wide receivers right there. I think Josh Freeman, what you said is key. If he cuts back the interceptions, the touchdowns will go up. If he can hang on to the football, I look at him a lot as Tony Romo-type clone of a quarterback. The skill set, the pieces can be there. Now it's time for him to put it all together. Now listen, Romo hasn't done it yet either, but I think Josh Freeman can creep up there. Got Josh Freeman as a bounce-back candidate. Probably one of my top bounce-back candidates for this season is Josh Freeman. I've been drafting him as a quarterback, too, just about in every league this year.
Yeah, I agree. I called him as making a big jump this year. He's a big kid, 6'6", 250. And, boy, I'll tell you what, watching LeGarrette Blount, I think he's really, responding to the tighter shit that Sean is running. Plus you got Martin in there. I think they got a pretty good duo of wide receivers, running backs as well. So, I mean, that could be a very balanced, pretty potent offense.
Yeah, and I think you look at – I think the next question, the important question there is, Corey, and I know you said you're not the biggest fan. What do you think – here's a guy you can get late. Do you see Vincent Jackson in this new situation having the ability to be – I won't go a QB or a WR1, but maybe a low-end WR2, somebody you can start on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I think you can start him on a weekly basis. But my thing with him is, I get criticized a lot of – playing this game of fantasy football. Number one rule is know your scoring system. Number two rule is leave your heart out of it. And I get accused of playing with my heart a lot. And I've seen Vincent Jackson quit before. And I don't like the guy that quits. And that has always turned me off to him, is that he has a tendency to quit. Now, in a new situation, you hope that leaves. Now, from a field fantasy football point of view, where his ADP is, where his value is, he'll probably overshoot that. So you have to like that. He's an excellent deep threat. If they want to take the top off the defense, you got a guy like Vincent Jackson, one of the best in the league that can do that. If you can draft him as a wide receiver 3, then I think you're in pretty good shape. But he's one of those guys. If you play him, he'll have 2 catches for 17 yards. And you'll get frustrated with him. And then you'll sit him. Then he'll catch 8 passes for 2 touchdowns and 127 yards. And then you're really banging your head against the computer screen now.
Sounds like Santana Moss and what he's done to me for each of the last 7 seasons.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's move on. We got a lot. Here's a big one. We got a couple Dynasty shows following us here tonight. We're not big into Dynasty, so I think it's been asked 2 ways, and it's been the big question this year, the 2 hot rookie quarterbacks, Andrew Luck and RG3. Let's start out with this year. Where do you see their fantasy value fall? And then we'll jump into what you think their Dynasty value is.
Dynasty, well, okay, for this season, you know, this is tough because I think both of these guys can be borderline quarterback ones, to be honest with you. I really think the new rookie quarterback comes into this to the league, and most of these guys have come from passing offenses in college, and they can fit right into NFL offense. You know, of course, everybody's not going to do what Cam Newton did last year, but I think you can be both guys can be serviceable. It seems like RG3 has more tools in place right now to go ahead and have a better season for fantasy owners this year. His ability to run the football. You know, fantasy owners have always been in love with the hybrid quarterback. Seeing RG3 getting drafted ahead of Peyton Manning, it baffles my mind, but that's where the ADP is right now. Guys are doing it. I think he can have a pretty solid season. Dynasty-wise, you got to go Andrew Luck. You have to. And that's been the common answer. That's probably not groundbreaking to anybody. But Andrew Luck, down the stretch, I mean, he's the heir apparent to Peyton Manning. You look at the way he throws the football. They're going to put the pieces around him. They build good teams in Indianapolis. He's going to be the guy. It's not going to be a situation where it's 4 or 5 weeks into the season. He's going to get sat down. They invested in him heavily. The kid's got a good head on his shoulders. I think you can have a fantasy stud for years to come.
Yeah,
both of them, though.
Oh, go ahead.
Both of them will be fantasy studs for years to come, but Luck in the long run a little bit further ahead.
Yeah, that's what I would have said, be honest with you. Of course, you know, talking about this year, I mean, up until really I saw Luck just in the preseason, and of course I know they're going against, you know, pretty much vanilla defense and so forth, but he looked very good. I mean, he just looked sharp and crisp. But before that game, I'd have certainly said RG3 probably this year because he was on a better team and probably had, you know, a better chance of scoring, but you know, I don't know. I think they're pretty much running the dead heat this year. And Dynasty, I think they're both going to be great. I would probably still go with Luck. I think he's less mobile. He's more like Manning. He probably has a longer shelf life than RG3 does.
Do you have any fear because he looks like Peyton Manning back there? It was one of the jarring things I noticed in that preseason game. And yet, I know they say he has the tools, but to follow a legend that way and to have those expectations, I just wonder, you buy anything into the fact that the weight of those expectations could wear on the guy and drag him down?
You know, that's a very good point, and I haven't really heard it brought out to that way. But, you know, take it a little bit deeper. Say Peyton Manning, say it was a situation where they wanted Peyton Manning back in Indianapolis. They didn't owe him that money. I don't think Peyton would have been comfortable with Andrew Luck there. Because, like you said, it's the heir apparent. Then if you're Peyton, you got to think, this kid might be better than me. Andrew Luck is going to be a good NFL quarterback. He's come from an NFL pedigree, you know, with an NFL family. Living up to those expectations can be tough. But if I had to pick one guy to do it, it would be Andrew Luck.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a sharp kid. And, you know, I don't know. Aaron Rodgers, you know, he came behind Brett Favre, and he's already, you know, surpassed him in my mind. And, of course, he's had a shorter career, but totally different styles. And I don't think he was intimidated by following Favre at all. So I think if the guy's got the talent and he's got a good head on his shoulders, I don't think he's going to have a problem following Manning as much.
I think just you look at it, and you bring up Aaron Rodgers, excellent example, the best example ever, Steve Young following Joe Montana. But beyond that, I'm having a hard time finding. It took 30 years for the Steelers to replace Terry Bradshaw. In my opinion, Dallas is still trying to replace Roger Staubach. And how many first-round guys, big names, have these teams brought in and just can't seem to replace them? You know, RG3 is a good example being in Washington. How long have they been struggling to replace, I guess, Joe Theismann, if you want to call him a legendary quarterback? I think it's tough, and I hesitate. You know, if I was in a dynasty league, obviously the upside on these guys, what their potential is. But in a redraft league, especially this year, I don't know. I'd be scared of him. And again, back to the previous question, I think you, in a standard 12 team, I think you can probably find 12 guys you're more comfortable starting. Obviously, these guys, good QB2s to stash away on the bench.
Yeah, you can definitely find. I would say you can't find 12 guys, you know, besides these guys. But, you know, I don't know what it is. The average fantasy owner is in love. They saw what Cam Newton did last year. They saw a little piece of RG3 to start the preseason, and they're in love with RG3. I mean, he has a higher ADP than Manning, higher ADP than Roethlisberger, higher ADP than Cutler.
Yeah, and it's something we actually talked about it last show. I'm calling it the Cam Newton effect. I think RG3 is getting bumped up in fantasy-wise because of what Cam Newton did. I just think that's so rare to expect to catch lightning in a bottle the second time. I think is almost impossible. You know, it has nothing to do with X and O's. Just sort of reality, the way things work out.
Well, the thing that made Cam Newton, you know, as we talked about, you know, quite a few times now, Rick, what made him so special is where he was getting drafted last year,
mm-hmm.
and that's what brings up what we call, you know, the Cam Newton effect. A lot of these average fantasy players, they're going to think RG3, okay, he's the next Cam Newton. Well, now all of a sudden they're reaching way up there to grab him, and now he doesn't produce. Well, you know, what's going on here? Well, you know, that's what we're trying to talk about. You know, as far as ADP goes, I hope he stays ahead of Peyton Manning and them, because that means I'm going to get some great value later on.
Definitely. One of the big things I was saying coming into the preseason was I wanted Peyton Manning to kind of fly under the radar. RG3, let these guys shoot up the board. Push Cutler further down the board so he can be there for me in the eighth or ninth round.
You betcha.
Absolutely. So let's move on. We'll skip. We already talked Cedric Benson. Let's jump down to, and I like this one, and this is, the way it's phrased is interesting. We've been asked this a couple of times. Going back to Jamaal Charles and talking Adrian Peterson, who just came off the PUP list the other day, you either want to, or draft either one of these guys as an RB1 this year.
Corey, go ahead.
I'll say this. I trust Charles as an RB1. Ideally, I would like to draft him as an RB2. I'm in the draft right now, and I took a quarterback in the first round. The value was too good. When I come back, I'm trying to get a running back, and I will be thrilled if Jamaal Charles is sitting on the board for me. In that situation, I like him as an RB1 because you have the big quarterback, the stud, one of the holy trinity of quarterbacks up top. Now, in other scenarios, I like him as an RB2, especially if you could team him with one of the big first-round guys. So I like his value as a 2 better, but if you have him as a 1, I want to come right back and get a Fred Jackson, a Steven Jackson, somebody like that, because, you know, he's still coming off a major knee injury, which had happened in week 2 as opposed to week 16. Peyton Hillis is going to be in the mix. But one thing about Jamaal Charles is he doesn't need many carries to run for 100 yards. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't need many carries. Of course, he may have the same issue not getting in the end zone, but what he can do, and he is so dynamic, averaging close to 5 yards a carry. He can get in the end zone on those long home run type plays. Ideally, an RB2. If you have to go at 1, I don't really have too much of a problem with it. Adrian Peterson as an RB1, hell no. Can't do it. Can't do it. Not no way. They're going to ease him back into it. Listen, I understand he looks good running up and down the field. He's racing Percy Harvin, came off the PUP list today. I don't care. He tore his MCL and his ACL in week 16. That's the franchise. That's the Minnesota Vikings franchise running back. That team's not going to, it's coming out the good NFC North and going to a Super Bowl this year. This is about getting him back in shape, getting him ready to make a run and preserve his career. Of course, I think he will have big games down the stretch. It will be games where he may even get catch fire week 6, week 7, and then run for 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. But what I think a lot of fantasy owners make is they say, oh, well, I'll have him for the playoffs. Okay. You got to get there first. You know what I'm saying? Why does everybody put themselves in the playoffs? Oh, well, I'll have him week 14, 15, and 16. He'll be healthy then. Well, how are you going to get there? With Beanie Wells? So, no, I don't like him. I don't like him as an RB2. I like him as an RB3 and as a flex play. I think that if you can get him at that point, his value will be there. That's where I think his value is at. That means I'm not going to get him because he's going in the second round. I think last I saw ADP was 21. I can't do that.
No, I agree with you there. That's for sure. I got him. The ADP I'm looking at, he's at 22, but still that's way too high. You know, I'm definitely comfortable with Charles as an RB1. Want no part of Peterson. I don't even know if I could go with low end RB2 either. he's way too iffy, and I agree with you. I don't. Minnesota's not going to risk this guy. Just going to, you know, hurrying him in. They're not going to do anything in that division. They're going to finish fourth, and that's just the way it's going. And I agree with you 100%.
Now, I think what's interesting, I like the point with Jamaal Charles, where I've seen this scenario a lot too, especially with so many question marks at running back this year, you know, leaning towards grabbing one of those big three quarterbacks or maybe even taking a risk on a wide receiver towards the end of the first round. I think a lot with Charles is going to depend on where you're picking. If you're picking towards the beginning, middle of the second round, I'm afraid, because to Corey's point, I want to come back and grab sort of a sure thing, a Steven Jackson, where not maybe a sure thing, but a more consistent guy, you know, is going to get carries. That's where he scares me. Now, the point with Adrian Peterson, I guess it comes down to where you can grab him. You know, I've seen him fall. I've actually, maybe mistakenly, I guess that's a question I have, taking him late in the third round, sort of stashing him away. If I already have a running back, you know, how early is too early for you, Corey, to have this guy to stash him based on the assumption that I'm making that at some point in the year, halfway through the year, he's going to be healthy, they're going to take the handcuffs off him and going to let him play?
This is, you know what, I've been trying to do this, and sometimes you get caught up in so many different drafts and so many different mocks. And what I'm going to try to do in the course of the next week is I want to sit down, not in one of these ESPN mock draft rooms with these idiots, you know what I'm saying? Not in one of these Yahoo mock draft rooms. I want to get some guys together and do a legit mock draft, and I want to do a strategy of going three running backs to start the draft. If I can start a draft with three running backs, if I can get Adrian Peterson towards the middle to the end of the third, that's something I'm willing to try, because wide receiver is so deep and so is quarterback that I think a three running back strategy could work. Now, at that point, Adrian Peterson as the third running back, as a possible flex play, I think I'm willing to give that a shot, because, you know, you can always grab Gearhart later on in the draft. You got some other guys out there that I like that we'll probably get into later that you can grab to fill the slot until Adrian gets hot or until Adrian gets warmed up. So if I'm going running back in the third round, towards end of the third round, I think I might be able to take a shot on Peterson at that point, but nothing before there. Definitely not where his ADP is at.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that's interesting, too, with the flex spot. Yeah, here's a guy, let's say he gets back beginning of the year, if it's week three, maybe even plays in week one. I think there's a number of guys out there who are going to be drafted as low-end RB2s that even if Peterson's only getting 8, 10, 12 of carries, I'd almost rather have him playing more in a flex spot than some of these other guys that you're going to be trotting out maybe as your RB2, just with his home run ability.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree. He's one of the, I don't know, he's just kind of scary. I mean, maybe in the next couple of weeks, and we see a little more progress or regress, whatever the case may be. Maybe it's more clear-cut answer to that. But, RB3 with a possible flex spot, that's about where I got him, that's for sure. Okay, here's a different one. We're going to this wide receiver stuff here. Is Wes Welker's stock rising, falling, or staying the same this year? And, of course, we have in PPR or in standard. I guess two different questions there.
You know, that's an interesting one. And it's only, you know, I think we get this question because there's guys that listen to our show. Of course, when we talk to Patrick Johnson, a former wide receiver of the Ravens, I know we bring him up all the time. We're still excited about that interview. But he was of the opinion, and knowing how Bill Belichick is and how he works a little bit, thinking this holdout, the contract issues, they may actually try to work him out of the offense a little bit to send him a message. It's something sticking in the back of my head. I don't know if I buy it. I think, look, in a PPR, this guy's a number one receiver. Even if they do reduce his workload, so he goes from, 14 catches a week to 10 to 12, I think I'll still take that. You know, standard, he might still be a low-end one, definitely an easy number two wide receiver. This is a guy I'd love to have, and it seems like still, after all he's done, still a guy you can get at a pretty fair value.
No, I'm looking up his ADP numbers right now, and, you know, I've never been a big fan of his, even though he puts up tremendous numbers. So, once again, there I go, drafted with my heart. Right now, his ADP in the PPR is coming in at number 20, and these are in drafts that have taken place since August 1st. He still has that wide receiver one value. Listen, if everybody on the New England Patriots team performs to their ADP, Tom Brady's going to throw 70 touchdown passes this season. I mean, with Gronk, with Hernandez, with Brandon Lloyd, and with Wes Welker, he's going to have phenomenal numbers. It has to be a regression somewhere. And when you look at the talent they have on that team, it's hard not to point to Wes Welker. I don't own Wes Welker. I haven't drafted him nowhere. I don't plan on drafting him anywhere. I think it's better options on the board. PPR or standard. I think the production goes down this season. I really honestly do. You know, I've never really liked him in the standard league. So I understand he's had some big seasons, and not being on my team has probably hurt. Not having him on my team has probably hurt me at points. But I just think that the price you have to pay for Wes Welker is sometimes a little bit too high, and especially this season with so many more. I mean, you look at Gronk. He's a red zone, not one of my favorites, but he's a red zone machine. Aaron Hernandez, I went on the round table. I said that I thought that he was going to finish the season number one overall tight end. Brandon Lloyd, it's a few guys that take the top off the defense better than Brandon Lloyd. Where does Welker fit into that mix?
Well, that's the thing. You know, of course, we were on the round table together. You think Hernandez – you see a regression because, you know, I've talked to you and listened to you on different shows. You say there's going to be a regression from Gronk, no doubt, correct?
Yes, I'm not on Gronkowski at all.
Okay, now, so there's some freed up passes and catches right there. Now, do you see Hernandez making a leap? I mean, is he going to put up Gronk 2011 numbers or close to it this year? Is that what you're seeing? Because to me in PPR, I still see Welker as one of the big weapons coming across the middle. I mean, the guy's pretty small. He's quick. He runs his crisp routes. And, you know, I just see him and Gronk last year, of course, both of the tight ends were Brady's safety blanket, you know, and that's Welker's has built up that sort of reputation there. Now, do you see him losing that many catches to both tight ends this year? And Lloyd, of course.
I think he'll lose some. I don't think he's going to fall off the face of the map. I think he'll lose some of his touches. I like Gronk to lose the touchdowns. I like Aaron Hernandez to get more involved in the seam. I think Brandon Lloyd is the benefit of the touchdowns, and Hernandez is the benefit of the touchdowns, too. We saw how they play with Lloyd, with Randy Moss and Josh McDaniels. I'm not saying that Welker is going to be irrelevant. I think the regression does come in to a certain extent. Also, it's guys I like more going at that point. That's a second-round wide receiver. And a year when wide receiver is deep and running back is thin. I think I'd rather pick off a second-round runner than to take a gamble, even though it's a good gamble in a PPR on Wes Welker. I'd rather take a second-round runner and come back and dig into some of that depth at wide receiver, third, fourth round, than to spend a second-round pick on Welker. When his role is kind of up in the air this season.
Yeah, it's interesting and it's tough. Well, when you're talking PPR, I just think if you're talking a full-point PPR, this guy –
catches. Yeah.
Exactly. So, and that's a lot of points. There may be other guys who get the one I find interesting in all this is Brandon Lloyd. This is a guy I've seen shoot way up the draft board and just going higher. And I like your point. You know, he's going to have to throw. Or Brady's going to have to throw for 7,000 yards and 75 to live up to the expectation of everybody around him. So I guess based on value, Welker's a guy I'd love to have, but I'm like you. I've actually never owned Wes Welker, and I don't see myself doing it again at this point, just from where I'm going to have to draft him.
Yeah, exactly. In the second round, I mean, that's just a little bit too high for me. My strategy is I don't think I've ever took a receiver in the second round, and I've done plenty of drafts, and I don't think I've once taken a receiver in the second round. Once I kind of got the hang of what the landscape was and how things were going, and then it could change next week.
Right, but you're right. It's tough to do. It's tough to take wide receiver in the second round when there's such a deep pool of talent. And I don't know. This is just a great question because you go back. What was it? 2007, I think it was. You know, when Randy Moss was there and Brady and him just had that tremendous year. You know, I see a little bit of that. You know, if Lloyd's healthy, You know, do you see a little bit of that kind of hookup coming?
Lord is not as talented as Randy Moss was.
Oh, no, I know that. No.
But listen, I think they can do that. I think they can do that. I was in the draft last night, and it's 30 rounds, IDPs, experts. And this is not a mock draft. And as I'm coming up in the fourth round, I look down the board and I see Brandon Lloyd. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to get him if he comes back. His ADP is suggesting that he's going in the fifth, sixth round. With the ninth pick in the fourth round, I dropped right down the board and I got Brandon Lloyd. I think Brandon Lloyd double-digit touchdowns this year. I think it's going to be a real exciting combination. The Patriots are, you know, and I hate to say it, but the Patriots look like they're loaded for a Super Bowl run. And I'm talking about a deep one. Now they always loaded. They come back and do this every year. But I think the addition of Brandon Lloyd really puts a dynamic spark plug to that offense. And then the most important thing is the routes that he runs. He's really turned it around and gotten himself together, sort of like how we all hope that Kenny Britt one day will. But he's gotten himself together. And I tell you what, the routes, the runs, he's a professional athlete. He's in a situation that he wants to be in New England, and I think Tom Brady wants him there. And they're going to utilize him, and I think he can have a very big season.
Yeah, no question about it. So let's move on. PPR question, who's the best out of these three? I think you can eliminate one right away, Corey, but we'll let you go ahead. Steven Jackson, Frank Gore, or Michael Turner?
No, I like Steven Jackson. I like Steven Jackson. I think he gets a bad rap. He has been nagging injuries, been banged up from time to time. But I like Steven Jackson. I think, and with that offense out there with Fox, I think he gets to run the ball, and he gets the points right per reception. Another thing he does, he plays well at the end of the season, which is very critical. He's a guy that even if you – a lot of times what happens with Steven Jackson owners is he hits that injury spell. He has a couple games where he doesn't do so well, and his owner wants to trade him. Go ahead and pull the trigger and bring him on your team. And this way you can get ready to make a deep run because Steven Jackson plays better as the season wears down. Frank Gore is starting to taper off. We saw that through in the last season. They brought in 17 running backs, like you guys said earlier, to kind of see who would fit the mold to replace him, not catching passes out the backfield like he once was. So I think Gore regresses. And who was the third one? I'm sorry.
Michael Turner.
Oh, Michael Turner. I mean, listen, he scores touchdowns. You can't knock him on that. He scores touchdowns. You have to. He's worth the draft pick because he scores touchdowns. But the other night, now, never mind, you don't want to put too much stock into a preseason contest, but Jaquizz Rodgers was running between the tackles. And if I'm Michael Turner, that shows me that they're trying to replace me.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, they said reduce workload. I sort of take him for granted still. I mean, maybe it wouldn't be 340 carries. Maybe get down to the 290 type of range is what I thought. And really, I think maybe in the long run, I think if you're running Rodgers between the tackles, you're setting yourself up for failure as the Atlanta Falcons.
That's true. That's true, too. That's a very good point because that's not his game.
Yeah, okay, I'll weigh in. I don't know why they're doing that, to be honest with you. I mean, they've got the proven tackle guy right there, Michael Turner. I mean, you can always reduce his load, but, you know, let Rodgers do his game. But out of those three, Gore is my third pick. I think he's declining quicker. But Steven Jackson, to me, head and shoulders in PPR over both these guys. And he's a consistent guy. He had, you know, the injury year, I think, back right when he's holding out and so forth. But, you know, he's been playing pretty steady the last few years. And he like Corey said, to his point, he keeps getting better as the year goes on. And that's exactly what you want, you know, when you're working towards the playoffs.
Yeah, I think no question about it. Here's a guy, he's only 3 or 4 years removed from being considered easily the number one overall fantasy running back. I think the big thing with him bringing in the new coach, here's a guy, you know, look at Eddie George, never the fastest, never the strongest, never anything, but always just consistently produced. I think this is the type of offense that they'll be installing there that Steven Jackson could thrive in.
And just one more point, I think, you know, we talked about Gore, you know, and all the runners coming in there, you know, working him out of a job. Rodgers is working Turner out of a job. You know, the Rams got Pete, but nobody's really talking about him working Jackson out of a job until really Jackson's done.
Yeah, exactly. And there you have it right there. You know that's the guy in the future when it comes to Steven Jackson. As far as what the 49ers have done, I've been hearing some reports, good reports about Kendall Hunter coming out of the camp. You know what? I've been drafting LaMichael James. I don't know why. Well, I'm going to tell you why. The Pac-10 guy, Harbaugh, Pac-10 coach. And he does what nobody on San Francisco can do. Score from anywhere on the field. Now, does that mean he's going to be a bell cow fantasy stud? Of course not. But I'd look for him to get in the mix. If you want to take a flyer, late, sleeper, look at LaMichael James.
Yeah, I agree. And, of course, you know, Harbaugh made that comment even before camp, well, I guess right when camp was starting, that all the running backs won't be happy this year. You know, whatever that message was supposed to mean, you know, Gore, your load's, you know, not going to be much. Brandon Jacobs, you're not going to see much. I have no idea, but it sounds to me like a little running back by committee there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you talk about calling your shot early. That's it right there. So let's move on. We're running short on time. I'll skip the Robert Meacham question because who cares? I like this one, and maybe your thoughts on handcuffs in general, and the best of, who do you think the best, or how do you rank these three handcuffs, if you want to call a couple of these guys handcuffs, being Tate, LeGarrette Blount, and Michael Bush?
Well, I will definitely go Blount myself. I'm not so sure he's a handcuff, to be honest with you. Michael Bush is more or less going to be Forte's handcuff. And we know Tate is going to get plenty of playing time behind Foster, but still Foster's a guy. I'm not convinced Blount is going to be just some backup running back. And, you know, I can certainly see, I've been saying this for weeks, and I still believe it, I can see like a Bradshaw-Jacobs tandem there where they're both going to get plenty of work. And, you know, where he's going, I mean, you're picking up LeGarrette Blount ADP like in the 11th round. I think he's going to be a steal.
You know, just the Blount Martin thing. You know, my fantasy mind changes, and I don't want to sound like I'm trying to be a roto visionary, but my fantasy mind changes from week to week with different topics. And this week, I've been thinking to myself, you know what? We've been spending a lot of time telling people to draft Doug Martin. I've seen him drafted as high as the second round, and LeGarrette Blount is still in the mix. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking to myself, why is everybody on Doug Martin? I understand the potential. I understand the upside. Everything that Martin brings to the table, Greg Schiano, LeGarrette Blount. But if Blount stays in gear and does what he's supposed to do, why would he be demoted to more or less a backup running back?
I have no idea.
I don't get why. Why is everybody saying that Martin is the guy to draft? Martin's going in the second round. Blount's going in the 11th. I don't pay too much attention to preseason depth charts. I don't put too much stock into that. But I put stock into LeGarrette Blount's job. Why is this rookie running back going to come and take it from him? I understand Blount is not a Schiano guy. Schiano brought Martin in. Martin looks very good. Catches passes out the backfield is a part of his game. Rookie running back who can't protect the passer, that helps him stay on the field also. But what happens to why, if LeGarrette Blount is putting his best foot forward, why is LeGarrette Blount all of a sudden going to lose his job? I don't know why. But to answer the question, Ben Tate runs like Evelyn Lozada is chasing him. and if Ben Tate was on the New Orleans Saints, he'd be a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, I don't think any question about it. Here's a guy who nearly put up 1,000 yards last year in limited duty. Yeah, I think you got a guy like Arian Foster making the money he is with the history of getting nicked up like he does. The way that offense runs, it almost looks like a better version of the, and Rick, you love this, the Ricky Williams, Ronnie Brown situation a few years ago. I think they both have fantasy value, and that's what I don't like about the question is calling them handcuffs. I honestly don't view Ben Tate as a handcuff. I view him really as a solid RB3 option in any format, not as Foster's handcuff, but as a guy you could play in a bye week or in a flex spot in a pinch. And if Foster goes down, you're talking about a guy who's who is a number one fantasy running back.
Yeah, I agree there. Oh, go ahead, Corey.
No, excuse me. You don't miss a beat. When Tate comes in for Foster, you don't miss a beat. But the thing with that is, if you're the Foster owner, where do you draft Tate at?
Yeah, that's the key. Because
you get those picks coming back on the turn. You have to wait a long time. You may have to draft him as high as the fifth round.
Yeah, and that's tough to pull the trigger, you know, when you're – you know, say you got a couple of running backs and you start seeing some of these big wide receivers go off the board, you know, you tend to, I got to get one of these guys, and I can always get Tate in a six. You probably won't get him in the six.
Well, in talking about the six, is that where you draft a handcuff? You know, you're drafting a handcuff normally in the 11th, 12th, 13th round. To have to draft I'm doing the air quote thing now, a handcuff in the fifth or sixth round. A fifth or sixth rounder is a guy that needs to be in your starting lineup.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what makes it so – that's why Tate – to the Foster owner, Tate is such a – it's like, well, what do I do? Do I go get him in the seventh round if he's there? I think in the seventh round you have to. But you're waiting a long time between draft picks. You're going to sweat it out. And if you want to be certain that you get him, you may have to take him in the fifth round. And that's tough to do because you're still putting the core of your team together. I believe if you buy the house, go back and get the insurance policy – You know Foster's history, not an injury concern, but here or there gets a little injury, nicks and knacks that kind of concern you. You know, and I have number one pick in my main league. I got number one pick in the draft. And I've been struggling with where do I take Foster. Now, the way we run it, and I'll throw this question out to you guys, is our keeper is one player that we drafted after the sixth round last season. Now, that guy on my – I have two guys on my team that I drafted after the sixth round last season. One is Victor Cruz. The other is Ben Tate. If I have the first pick with Foster, should I even consider keeping Ben Tate over Victor Cruz?
I don't think you can, you know, and it goes back to the problem. Why you'd love to have him, and maybe even a guy if you're playing Foster, assuming you're going to draft Foster – You know, their Victor Cruz is your number one wide receiver. You have that taken care of. Plus you have your Foster. Or if you're a McCoy or Rice guy, you know, you can go either way you want to with that. But to have Tate and to pick up Foster, I think, can you really play both of these guys every week? I don't think you can do it consistently and do it well. It's a tough spot. Now maybe if you're a Rice guy, do you think about Tate? Then I don't think the value's there because he doesn't. Now you're waiting for Foster to get hurt, and there's nothing worse than sitting around waiting for somebody to get hurt for fantasy points. So I think you have to take Victor Cruz there.
Yeah, definitely. But I've thought about it though. Tate is the X factor to the Foster owner because a guy will draft him and will hold you hostage for him all season long.
Yeah. Well, what are your thoughts on handcuffs in general? I've never been a big guy into handcuffs. I think with these number one running backs, you're carrying around, to throw out an example of, it doesn't matter, somebody's backup who's not going to see the field save for an injury. My thought is there's a reason this guy's a backup, but I think there's guys who are going to get carries that you can draft that you can just sort of move on. Maybe it's going to be a step down, but more of a sure thing. Do you generally, if you had one of those stud three, or if you had a Chris Johnson, are you going to carry Ringer? Do you spend those draft picks on a handcuff generally?
I generally, you know what, for the most part, I really don't. To be honest with you, I'll just go about my business, putting my team together, trying to get the guys I think are going to hit, trying to get my guys. You know, of course, a guy like Tate, if you can get Tate, that's good. Peyton Hillis, if you're high on Charles, you may want to jump back and get Peyton Hillis. Michael Bush is a guy also that you might want to get in the mix. But, you know, these guys come with prices attached to them because you can play Peyton Hillis as an RB3, as a flex. You can play Michael Bush on a bye week. Now, another guy that's interesting to me is Mike Goodson, because when Mike Goodson went down in camp, you know, it's so funny, but when Mike Goodson got hurt and people thought it might have been serious, I looked at McFadden differently, because I'm now looking at McFadden like, okay, now when you get hurt, I got to go pull Tywan Jones off my bench. Tywan Jones sucks. Mike come in and run just like Darren McFadden did, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, and I think in Charles is right back the Charles Hillis situation. Hillis is that's almost the same as the Foster Tate situation. Again, here's a guy you're going to have to draft fifth, sixth, seventh round. Hard to consider him a handcuff.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with Tate. There's a lot of value attached to this guy. Michael Bush probably the same way. We don't really know in Chicago yet, but he was that way in Oakland. They're really not really handcuffs per se. I mean, I go back to, I don't know what it was, about 3 years ago. Rick referred to it earlier. You know, I drafted Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams of the Dolphins. And there were weeks I was starting both of those guys, you know, before Ronnie Brown went down. And they were scoring pretty well. And, you know, with Hillis and Charles, it may work out similar that way, although I think Charles is going to get the brunt of it. But, you know, that's the thing with a guy like Tate and them. They may get enough work where they're worth a, you know, I don't know. I hate to tell people, you know, it may be worth the pick. It's a quandary. But you see where I'm going with, I guess, is my point. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you attach this value to him. Where Blunt, I mean, he can stay at 11th all day. And I mean, I'll grab him in the 10th in front of everybody.
Yeah, I think no question about that. Well, let's hit real quick. We only have about a minute for this one, Corey. And I think it's a guy who is fifth or sixth on everybody's running back list. Now, knowing with the injury, where do you draft Ryan Matthews now?
The last draft I was in, I've seen him go in the second round. Same thing with me as with Peterson. If I can get him as my third running back in the third round, hate to say it, but the injury kind of put his value right where it needed to be.
I agree. I am not. I wasn't high on him. I know, Rick, you have a totally different opinion. I was not high on Matthews at all. I thought he was. I obviously thought he was an RB2 before the injury, but. You know, now I'm looking maybe at an RB3.
An RB2 before the injury.
Yeah, I just don't think.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I just don't. He hasn't convinced me.
See,
you know, he doesn't have the body of work. I'm sorry.
Well, I can't argue now, obviously. I think before the injury, calling him an RB2 is pretty tough. Yeah, I think same point with these guys. You're going to have to get him as an RB3. Assume, you know, he doesn't seem that tough to me. So to think he'll be back in week two, I think you're looking at week three or four, and then you're holding your breath hoping he makes it through the rest of the season. So, well, we have plumb run out of time. Corey, thank you so much. Why don't you tell them one more time where they can find you?
Monday through Friday, 7 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Roto Experts in the morning on Sirius XM Fantasy Football, Fantasy Sports Radio, and of course this weekend out in New Jersey, Atlantic City at the Fantasy Football Festival.
And we will stop by and see you for sure.
Definitely come through, and then after everything is over, we'll have a beer.
Sounds great. That's awesome. We appreciate you coming on, and we'll certainly have to do it again soon.
Thank you, sir.
Great. Thanks, Corey. All right, Rick. That was awesome.
Let's get that was just awesome. I think we helped some of these, you know, the average player, you know, that's where we assume a lot of these questions come from. I hope we helped and more and didn't confuse you.
And if nothing else, I put in the chat room on Blog Talk where we were talking, I would listen to Corey read the phone book. This guy's just fantastic.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But anyway,
stay tuned. Rick,
you stay tuned for Kellogg's comments. Greg's going to be interviewing the sports tax man Robert Riola tonight. Interested in how taxes or contracts work in the NFL? Then you need to tune in and definitely call in and get your questions in there. And you can catch them at blogtalkradio.com/fantasy-sharks.
Absolutely. So check that out, tinyurl.com/TB2, I believe it is. I hope I got that right, Greg. Everybody check it out. We'll be back again Saturday. Don't forget that.
We're going to be in Atlantic City.
We won't do the Friday show. We're broadcasting live from the Fantasy Fest on Saturday. Until then, we'll see you.
Take care.
Out of town about half a mile. Four-wheel driving big mud cars. Must get down and wild. Georgia Clay and I.